Now, they may be tiny, but they're unsung heroes when it comes to our health. Our next guest looks at the latest research into the incredible role played by microbes in our digestive systems and beyond.
Check it out. There are up to 10 times more microbe cells, apparently, in our bodies than actual human cells. And new research shows they might affect measures of health ranging from digestion to sleep, obesity to disease immunity.
Here with us now is Rob Knight, professor of pediatrics and computer science and engineering at the University of California, San Diego. He's the co-founder of the American Gut Project and the author of Follow Your Gut, The Enormous Impact of Tiny Microbes. Rob, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks, Veronica.
So here it is, the year 2015. It seems as though we have advanced quite a ways. So how is it that we've missed the importance of gut microbes so far?
Well, they all look pretty much the same under the microscope. So it's only the fact that DNA sequencing dropped in cost by a factor of almost a million over the last 15 years that lets us really find out about all these microbes at the level that we need to, that is in their DNA rather than just visually.
Well, let's have a little gut microbe 101 here. What exactly are they, and what do they do?
Well, the microbes in your gut, broadly speaking, consist of the bacteria, the archaea, the fungi, the viruses, and then if you're not feeling too good, maybe Giardia and other microbial eukaryotes. What they're doing in general is all kinds of things like helping you digest food, helping your immune system, feeding the cells that line your gut, all kinds of things like that.
But you just listed things like viruses. Aren't viruses bad?
Some viruses are bad. Viruses that attack bacteria that are harmful to you are good for you, though, even if they're bad for the bacteria they attack.
Now, you make the argument that microbes might be more important to our health than every gene in our genome. How is that possible?
They have a lot more genes than we do, and if you take something like obesity, I can tell you with 90% accuracy whether you're lean or obese based solely on the microbial genes that you harbor. So you might be thinking, hey, wait, that's not that impressive. I can tell if I'm fat by looking in a mirror. But if I knew every gene in your human genome, I could only tell if you were lean or obese with about 60% accuracy based on your human genes versus 90% accuracy based on your microbial genes. We're finding out that the same kind of thing is true for all kinds of other diseases.
What kind of other diseases are we talking about?
So other things that microbes have been linked to include things like cirrhosis, rheumatoid arthritis is affected by microbes in your gut, ability to metabolize different drugs, so that's not really a disease, but it might affect your health, including drugs like the active ingredient in Tylenol, linked back to your microbiome. And then in mice, at least, so we don't yet know whether this applies as well to humans, but in mice, microbes even determine things like how happy or depressed you are, determine things like whether you show symptoms related to autism, and we're still trying to figure out whether that's true in humans as well. But the idea that microbes play a tremendous number of roles in our bodies and even affect our minds is getting more and more evidence just over the...
And Rob, are you still with us? Looks like we have lost Rob for the moment. We're going to try to get him back as we talk about gut microbes right now. We are learning about these tiny organisms in our gut, roughly speaking, and how science thinks they have an increasingly important role in our health. We're just talking there about some links to possibly obesity, other illnesses that we're working on, and mental health as well. And let's see, Rob Knight, are you back with us?
Yep. I don't know what happened there.
Perfect. Well, we're talking a bit about all the effects that gut microbes have, but why? Do we know why they have such a profound effect on our health, what the function is?
We're still just beginning to understand why, and there's many different things that they can do. Sometimes they're producing metabolites that get into your bloodstream and can interact with your cells to change the pattern of gene expression and change your health. Sometimes they're signaling through your nervous system. Sometimes they're signaling through your immune system. So there's really a lot of different things they can do. And the mechanisms are just now being worked out on a case-by-case basis.
Now, we hear a lot about encouraging healthy flora in our gut. And if you go to a health food store, Walgreens, a drugstore, whatever you have, you can buy probiotics, for instance, which are supposed to encourage a healthy gut. Is that the right thing to do? Is that what we mean when we talk about healthy gut flora?
Well, there's certainly a lot of enthusiasm for probiotics, and there's been some clinical trials where specific probiotics have been shown to be good for specific conditions, like, for example, for irritable bowel syndrome or for diarrhea after you've taken antibiotics. But it's kind of like asking, are chemicals good? You know, some drugs are good for some diseases, but the average chemical that you find on the shelf at Walgreens, you probably don't want to take irrespective of which particular condition you have. So you want to think about probiotics the same way. There are some bugs that you can treat as though they were drugs and are going to be useful for particular conditions, but it's more difficult to make blanket recommendations. Now, that said, links between fermented food and health have been widely believed by a lot of people, including many traditional cultures, and so there's probably something to it. Although that's very different from thinking that a particular yogurt or a particular bug is going to be a cure-all for anything.
Looking down the road, though, do you see a time when we prescribe a microbe that's prescriptive for a specific ailment?
Well, absolutely. And so, for example, for irritable bowel syndrome, there have been some clinical trials that have been very encouraging already. And similarly, a lot of doctors will prescribe probiotics, particular probiotics for things like recovering from diarrhea. One of the fascinating things is Clostridium difficile associated disease. So there are cocktails of microbes in clinical trials right now that are very effective at treating that particular illness. And so I think we're going to see that kind of thing on the market very soon.
One thing that we've been hearing a lot about in the news, the medical news, is antibiotics having perhaps resistant strains of antibiotics out there and some of the dangers that can come along with that. Is that something that you think that we should be concerned about for a whole different reason, and that is our gut flora?
Absolutely, and there's evidence that especially early life antibiotics has a tremendous effect on the gut bacteria later on, including things like promoting illnesses that we now know are linked to our gut bacteria, including asthma, allergies, even obesity. And so the overuse of antibiotics, both in terms of direct effects on our health, as well as promoting the rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria that could then kill us, is of tremendous concern. And especially using antibiotics in livestock, that really promotes antibiotic-resistant bacteria that can then cause problems for humans in hospitals.
In your TED Talk, you talk about your colleague. You were charting the gut bacteria of this colleague's child from birth to, I think, the age 2.5, and even that child had to take one course of antibiotics. Is it unrealistic to think that we could live in an antibiotic-free society?
It's unrealistic to think we could live in an antibiotic-free society because antibiotics certainly save lives, and when they're medically necessary, you definitely need to take them. But you want to think about it more in terms of minimizing your use of antibiotics. And a lot of things that people take them for, like, for example, ear infections, there's actually very little evidence that they help with that, as opposed to some of the life-threatening illnesses that you really need to prescribe them for.
Now, lately, we've heard more about therapies like fecal transplants. So that's not usually a phrase that anyone's really happy to hear. It doesn't sound very pleasant. But on the other hand, this sounds like something that has real potential to help people. Can you tell us what a fecal transplant is and how it might work?
Sure, absolutely. So if you think of your gut bacteria as being like an organ in your body, it's the only organ that you can actually transplant without surgery. And essentially what you're doing is you're taking the fecal bacteria from one person, putting them into another person. So there's two routes that you can go with that. Our clinical collaborators who actually do the transplants call those the northern and the southern routes, respectively. And both of them are up to 95% effective for the special case of Clostridium difficile-associated disease. So C. diff kills 14,000 people a year in the United States alone. It's one of the most common hospital-acquired infections. So essentially, what you're doing is you're making a stool smoothie, and either taking it in through a feeding tube that goes through the nose and into your stomach, or you can also do it via colonoscopy. And one of the big questions at the moment in the field is for how many of these other diseases that we now know are linked to the microbiome, everything from inflammatory bowel disease to rheumatoid arthritis, And even if the mouse model data hold up, things like depression and autism could potentially be treated either by that kind of therapy or by transplanting in more specific bugs rather than transplanting everything in a stool sample.
It's fascinating stuff. Before we let you go, how fast do you think we could start to see targeted therapies for diseases, maybe obesity, maybe other diseases based on microbes?
Well, for C. diff, this product in phase 3 clinical trials at the moment. For obesity, the research is a bit further off, but I'd say that clinically validated microbiome-based therapies are probably going to show up within the next 5 to 10 years for a whole range of different conditions. And what's really exciting about obesity, a French group showed just a couple of years ago that that you could actually predict who was going to gain weight, who was going to stay the same, and who was going to lose weight on a clinical weight loss diet based on the microbes they had beforehand. So I think those kinds of tests to figure out how you're going to respond to diet, to exercise, to drugs, and so forth, might be on the market even sooner and even before therapies that are based on the microbiome.
Rob, thanks so much for talking today.
Thanks so much, Veronica.
That was Rob Knight, professor at the University of California, San Diego, and the author of Follow Your Gut, The Enormous Impact of Tiny Microbes.